How about now? There we go. Thank you. This is going to be a bit of a different presentation because we're looking at a very high level, at the executive level, and how you talk to executives and prepare the organization for what we're doing. So I am Steve Garfine, and I'll tell you a little bit about myself in a minute, but Dries, why don't you come up and tell them where you're from and what you do. My co-presenter.
Hi everybody, I'm Dries van der Kolf. I'm managing director of TPG Africa. We're part of the Africa group, of the TPG group. And in Africa, we've been doing Project Server since its inception in 2002, one of the very first implementations in Africa and the Middle East, and we've been at it all along. And we've been working with Stephen for a while now. So, yeah, that's me.
Now, up here, someplace, here it is, good. It says, I'm going to walk down here primarily and not be on the podium. I started with Microsoft Project in May of 1988. And I founded RPM Systems in 1979. It's still in operation all these years later. And I'm going to tell you about that journey and how we've come to focus on what executives care about. So I assume that's why you're in the room here, not all of the technical stuff that underlies Microsoft Project and the cloud and so on. So up here, you may want to look at it later. This is a blueprint that I put together in 1990 because at that point, Project was just going to be released. It was released in May of 1990. I traveled around with the general manager. We launched it. Project ended up displacing WordPerfect and Lotus 1-2-3 in the aerospace industry. They were not interested in Word and Excel in aerospace and defense. But once they saw there was a project management tool, all of the competition went away. And essentially, over the next few years, they all became Microsoft-based. Well, this blueprint was an attempt, and we still use this case study today teaching at the university level. I teach primarily at universities in Australia, and you might ask why. It's because I like Australia. I love Australia. And so this really showed how you manage an aircraft company or a production company or a company that's doing product development using Word, Excel, and Project. And at that time, Bill Gates was still testing software. At night, he would test Project. So I was supposed to give a presentation to his senior executives, senior vice presidents, and so on. And I was in his boardroom alone, and I had this blueprint up on the wall. And Bill Gates walked by, and he looked in, and He'd never seen anything like this on his boardroom wall. So we stopped. He stopped. He came in. He was very solicitous and very interested in it. And we started at this end, and we went all the way through down to this end. And he asked a lot of very, very, very good questions. Right? Now, what happened is I was the first Microsoft Project partner. I was an MVP, and then about 10 years ago, I lost interest in Project because I started working at a higher level. I got very involved with the Project Management Institute. So now we're going to launch into the presentation, and we'll show you why you are here and why we think it's interesting. So the challenge for CEOs is that and I'm going to move up here so I can look at you and look at the screen easily. There's a very high failure rate in companies achieving their strategic goals and objectives. About 44% of what they start out to do doesn't happen. on average, companies only achieve about 56%. And I'll show you this. And all of this is backed up by formal papers that I presented at PMI congresses. So basically, there are there was a survey done of 187 companies, and the leading reason CEOs were fired is they poorly managed change during the execution of the strategy. Now, just think about how fast things are moving today and how nervous the board of directors get when you are not moving. Look at all the cloud-based decisions. Look at all the you bet the company decisions. And one of the things that I found in my consulting practice is a lot of my employees didn't have the skills that I needed as we moved through the years. So I had to adopt a different model in order to have the latest software skills that I needed. Now, this diagram, and I'm not going to read these diagrams to you. They're in the pack. You can look at them. This session is being recorded. And basically, this is a loop where you identify and translate the vision, and you come up with measures, and you monitor the performance, and you get feedback. It's pretty generic. But what happens is we now can put the strategic management and operations loop in it and enhance it and make it all happen with Project Online and Office 365. And you're going to hear a lot about expanding strategic throughput and global portfolio management in the next few minutes. Now, all of this happens within an organizational change context. And last year, PMI asked me to write a chapter in this new publication. Has anyone heard of this publications published mid-last year, Managing Change in Organizations, a Practice Guide? Raise your hand if you've heard of it. Okay. One. Do you have a copy? Wonderful. Why'd you get it? Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. Not properly managing change is the biggest reason for project failure that I've seen in the 30-plus years I've been doing this. So PMI asked me to write the change management at the portfolio level. And that's my chapter, but I can't say it's really my chapter because there were six authors in the other chapters, and we really collaborated on this. So that's what this is all about. And Dries, there were some people that came in late. Would you... if you'd raise your hand, we have a handout that has a lot of this material on it. So just raise your hand and Dries will get it to you. So why do we care about 365? Well, it's the glue between the strategy, the global portfolio, and execution and operations. The thing that we saw in the keynote address, okay, was how this all plays together. And all this rich information is there and available. And that's how we talk to CEOs. We say it is no longer a technology issue. So if you look at these following bullets, it expands strategic throughput. We'll talk about what that is. It works virtually anywhere in the world. It speeds innovation. It seamlessly communicates, increases agility and control, and facilitates data-driven decisions. Now, you saw all that in the keynote this morning. So what we're doing is we're talking about how you talk to senior executives and what they need to be aware of. The failures we've seen, and I don't have time to talk about several case studies, we've seen some major failures, for example, in a big pharmaceutical company where they wanted to implement a global clinical trials management system. And it failed because the manager was at the mid-level of the company and he didn't have any executive support. But I can list example after example like that where the technology was fine, but it was the other things. So Project Online, as you've seen, it's a powerful tool, it's an enabler. And so next, we're going to focus on the management tools that are in the handout that you saw. So this is our environment. We're talking about an executive perspective for strategic portfolio management, Office 365, and Project Online. And expanding strategic throughput has these four areas, specifically initiative articulation, and I'll show you a brief example, and then in the center of your handout, it is explained in a bit of detail. Organizational performance assessment and strategic throughput assessment. And then managing organization change, we have the work preference indicator and the change readiness assessment. Now, I've been involved, prior to founding RPM Systems, I've been involved with a really major project that was extremely successful and is still successful today. I was the enterprise portfolio manager on the company that built the Apache helicopter. First, I was in the weapons department and managed that aspect of the project. And then I moved to the company level and managed not only the overall portfolio of the company, but also the other divisions of the company. And this was before desktop PCs, and all we had was an IBM PC. All we had was a 360 mainframe. So all of this has become much easier to do today because of the tools we have. We use the Hydromax Seaplane Company as a teaching vehicle. And then I've already talked about these words at the bottom of the slide, expanding throughput all the way to effectively manage resources. So here is the case study. This is the Hydromax Seaplane Company, and it's relevant because it's spread all over the world. TPG, my friends here, do all of the information technology because this is an aircraft company, and they don't want to manage information technology. They want to use the Microsoft products in the cloud, and they want a company that has expertise to make it all happen for them. Then this is the environment. And then here are the tools. So this one slide puts it all together. It says, okay, you've got the company up there. It's in the cloud. Microsoft Project Online, Office 365, and now we're going to talk at an executive leadership team level at the bottom of the slide. So this is just here. These are the publications going back to about 2006 where we're talking about organizational change, managing organizational change, identifying change managers, and strategic portfolio management. So these are all published papers. They're available if you're interested. Now, expanding strategic throughput. Talked a bit about that already, but basically you've got a funnel. Those of you who are in the sales organization know about a sales funnel. Well, a strategic throughput funnel is the same thing. The strategy is developed over here by the executive leadership team, and then those of us down in middle management look at it and say, well, how are we going to do that? Or that's not realistic. Or don't they know that we don't have enough people to do that? So on. So here, and this is based on some really good work. This is not my construct. This is some research from 2006. And it says on the far left, our projects aligned to your strategy. On the far right, did you execute them to your strategy? So on the bottom is a formula that we use. And it isn't a formula you can really ever prove. But it says the strategic throughput is a function of how good your executive team is, your portfolio management, program and project management, and operations management. So there's the formula. And here are some of the statistics, and there's the reference from 2006 and the research where they looked at 87 leading companies. And the far right box on the prior slide, strategy executed to plan, companies only get about 56% of their strategy implemented. Excellent companies get 83. So here's the way the math works. And this is important to, just as a construct. You can see the maximum possible is 100. And a high performer achieves 83%. So they are in the 90s on all of those measures, project, portfolio management, and so on. But you don't have to fall very far, and you become a low performer. In this particular incidence, I've seen companies like this where you have poor portfolio management. I mean, I was talking to someone, and he's not in the audience right now, so that's good. They've got 600 employees, a ton of projects, and his boss is very upset that he can't get a view of hit the total portfolio. So they would, and they've got big resource problems. So they would score in the 60 or 65%, and they would be a very low performer in terms of getting their strategy done. So the initiative articulation framework. This is very, very useful framework. It's rather classic, and I don't expect you to read this, but this slide deck is going to be available for you for your viewing. And I can give you a case study. In 2004, the director of the PMO and I gave a presentation on this at a PMI Congress in Anaheim. And this is exactly what they did. Amazingly successful company. They had six initiatives that they went and put through this process, and I'll show you a little bit of it, because we have these tools. The object of our session today is to say these instruments we're going to show you are available, and if you want to use any of them, see me, and we'll make them available to you. They are proprietary tools, just like the apps are. But I can tell you, I'll give you a case study later on about how Dries and I used one of these tools very effectively in South Africa. So I'm going to talk about articulating initiatives and preparing preferred future state diagram. So we can talk about this as a future state diagram. What's going across the screen right now are four initiatives over n periods of time, going to a future state, and you can see strategy execution at top, but organizational change. And as you know, who the person, what's your name, who had the
Debbie
had the copy of the organizational change practice guide. The most difficult part is changing the organization, and there's very few initiatives that don't require some significant change in the organization. Here is the initiative articulation form. It's quite long, and the executive leadership team wants to see this before they will fund an initiative. It might say, we need $2.6 million to do this, but when we get it done, we will have the ability to answer a query from a customer in under 30 seconds, because we'll have all the data there, and here's what the return on investment would be, just as an example. This is another instrument. It's the organizational performance assessment, and it helps identify where there are problems in the company. So you can put in a great system in the cloud and so on, but if you have some of the problems in your company that this is going to show, you need to address them beforehand. So the whole idea of this is, on the bottom right, you want enduring organizational benefits. You begin with a great mission, supportive policies, loyal and dedicated employees, and so on. So here's what it looks like. There are 10 indicators or measures. And the first one is mission, supportive policies, and we're going to look at two. Look at number two and number four, supportive policies towards the workforce and positive working conditions. Before I leave the slide, this is the overall company, and 50% level is industry average. So you can see a number of these are below industry average. And here, this is supportive policies towards the workforce. And you can see that there are three organizations that are not particularly happy with the way they're being supported. The accounts department, which is, let me see if I can get it right here, the training division, and the administration department. All right. Here's another, positive working conditions. Well, it turns out the administration department does not think they have positive working conditions. So anyway, there are 10 measures in this. This is a good way to get people to voice where they are when you're doing an initiative, because it may sabotage, their discontent may sabotage the success of what you intend to do. Now, this is the tool that Dries and Peter Meyer, who couldn't be here today from South Africa, and I used with the State Information Technology Agency, SITA. And just a little background before I show you the tool. This is a model. I'm going to show it to you in four parts. And when it's all together, it's very comprehensive. Comprehensible, and an executive understands this at first glance. But I'm going to deconstruct it first before I show you the total. So you have all of these things that you might be your strategy: reduce cost, return on investment, increase quality, all the way down to change industry and market practices. Right? Well, I think, you know, the iPhone, for example, changed industry and market practices. Now, you've got all these venues, and the venues will change with companies, from research all the way down to buying back your own stock. Information technology, and they will vary. And here's the closed loop. And what's important about this is that in each one of these intersections, you are mapping. So as you start these initiatives, you're bringing the metrics around so that you can tell whether or not you're achieving your strategy according to plan. This isn't just some loose, well, we'd like to do this. No, what are the measures? And then we have in the middle of it the Project Management Institute standards. And then lastly, and this is the most important part, because this is the assessment, the eight areas of assessment. We look at governance, we look at strategy management, and this is a very quick assessment. It's a very easy assessment to do. Portfolio management, project and program management, organizational structure, information technology, people, and corporate culture. So there's the overall model. We first presented that at PMI in 2006. Now, what I want to focus on right now is, here's that overall model, and here are the eight areas, and each area has approximately five questions in it. So it's a very, very simple assessment, strategic throughput assessment. And here is the first set of five questions. Does the organization have a well-defined strategy? A documented strategy execution plan? Strategies communicated clearly, and so on. Appropriate and effective processes are in place to monitor and manage risk. So I'll tell you in some detail what we did to implement this in South Africa. Here's the gap analysis. The blue means it's good. The red means that there's a shortfall or gap that needs to be addressed. So they're pretty good at project and program management. They have some organizational areas and some governance areas that are problematic. So on the left in the photograph, you see the actual handouts that we used. We had about 50 middle managers. The problem here was the agency was on its third turnaround plan. And if this wasn't being recorded, I would tell you more, but that's all I'm going to say. But what happened here is this helped these middle managers come up with remediation plans. Okay, here's our gap. What are we going to do about it? What's it going to take? So it gave these 55 middle-level managers a voice to speak power to the board and say, all right, you say you want to outsource us if we can't do better, but here's what we need to do better. Here's the way we need to be supported. What I'm going to do at this juncture is I'm going to stop and let's just think about and talk about this whole idea of strategic throughput and your organizations. I believe in hang times, so if I'm willing to wait till we have some volunteers on this, but does anything come to mind where you've had a major strategy shortfall that you think could have been avoided? Some brave individual? Say again? Constantly. Is there one that you would like to share with our group as a kind of a model, or even if it's anonymous, you don't have to tell the company name. That's quite common.
It's a very successful company.
Oh, yes. Okay. That's a very good point. Right. The point was that there was a lot of change, and they weren't sure where they were going, yet it was a very successful company. Thank you for pointing that out. Maybe this isn't a good thing to do, this kind of Q&A, except there is a microphone. Yeah. Dries, during this phase, if you would go to them and give them your mic as we get questions. Anyone else would like to add something in terms of real-world experience?
You want me to?
Yeah. Do you want to
invite somebody?
Yeah.
We've experienced where management had very poorly articulated goals.
The products weren't aligned with what?
Oh, with where we needed to be competitively.
Ah.
Okay, so then there were shortfalls in revenue, and then that resulted in layoffs. So there were fewer people to then execute. So it was a spiraling downward challenge.
Did they choose the wrong things to do in the first place?
It wasn't a proactive choice. It was haphazard.
You know, one of the reasons CEOs get paid so much money is for their wisdom in choosing the right things to do. And that's also why they lose their jobs, too, when they don't do that. So we're going to go into the second part of this, and that is this organizational change. You want to add something? Go ahead.
I was going to comment, too.
Speak clearly in the microphone.
I was going to comment, too, on the execution, the rollout. You know, it's not so much on the upfront that I'm seeing a poor choice, but it's on the back end of how are we going to make this happen. We're often on to the next thing before we actually execute. I'd just like your comments on that.
Well, you just led into the second and most important part of our talk. And exactly what happens is people focus on the project aspect of things, and they don't focus enough on the organizational change that's going to occur. And when they do, it's really too late often. And you have to begin very, very early on the organizational change. So managing organizational change, rate of change is accelerating. We've got exponential growth and global availability of information and technologies. And the whole global marketplace is expanding. Most companies are not ready for this. So that's being recognized more and more. This particular slide shows the publication that I've held up. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more coming on this, because this is the difference, as far as I'm concerned, between success and failure. I've got a good friend from Microsoft in the audience here who I've known more than 20 years. Right, Adrian? And Microsoft has the solution. And you don't talk to executives about the solution or just tell them it's there. You know, it's there, it's in the cloud, it's easy to do. What's hard to do is to implement it in an organization. Right? So let's talk about that. About 5 years ago, I started using an instrument called a work preference indicator. It identifies individuals with a preference for managing changes. And I have given this instrument now to over 200 people like you in various audiences that I've talked to and various workshops I've done. And it's based on this model, which was done by two PhDs and presented at a PMI research conference. And basically, it says in square one, if it's a project and it doesn't have any change to it, you know, not much change, then it just manage it as a project. But most projects have some organizational aspect to it, and you have to go through this loop that goes off to the right and continue to go back and see if you are on track. Are the assumptions you made about how this is going to be received by the end user, are they still valid? Or are you getting resistance? Do you need to delay rolling it out and do more training or perhaps redesign because the users are really distressed about the approach you've taken? Now, these same authors, Nymes and Crawford, identified these factors that are common to change managers, that's the yellow, CMs, program managers, and project managers. However, change managers also have a different set of traits, as you see on the right-hand side here. This gets to be really important. Change managers are different. So the Gilbert Work Preference Indicator is 100 questions. It's online. And for example, I taught a class, and you'll see some results, in Australia, graduate level project management class, University of Technology in Sydney. And all 34 students took the Work Preference Indicator before I went down to teach. And so you can see it's divided into change manager preferences, project manager, and team member preferences. Important thing is change managers achieve results, but they're not as schedule and cost driven often. They explore ideas, and they are flexible. Oftentimes, projects and program managers are not as flexible as they need to be to make it a success. And then here's a typical scoring or graphic, and this person is both a change manager and a project manager in terms of the scoring. Now, this is the class in Australia. And about a year after I taught the class, I said, I wonder what their grades were. Now, I only taught 40 hours. I taught 1 week. But it was a semester-long course. And what we have is a very high correlation. The people who scored very high as change managers got the among the highest grades in the class. I didn't expect that correlation. But what I did was, okay, if we're doing this Hydromax case study over the period of the week, I chose the change managers to lead the teams. And so I got to observe them and their leadership and so on. But they also got the highest grades. Now, I didn't grade them. The professor who was responsible for the course graded them. I thought this was a very interesting correlation. And then the last instrument we want to talk about is the change readiness assessment. How ready is your organization to change? Now, I have a personal experience with this back when I was in aerospace on the Apache. We were having a huge problem getting, are any of you in aerospace in here? Okay, one. We were having a huge problem getting our management system bought off by our customer and the Army. And they just weren't going to give us a contract unless we had a validated management system. And I could not get my management to listen to me. I was pretty junior. I knew what was wrong. So I brought in some consultants who spoke truth to power. President of the company gave them a half hour to brief him. And it ended up taking 5 hours. He shot at them, and he by the time the 5 hours was over, he was a true believer in what was wrong and what was needed to do, and I had all the power at that point to fix it. So what we're talking about here is an instrument that can help you do that kind of thing. And basically, here's your organizational environment. And this is a diagram that is essentially out of this document, except in this document it's all gray and it goes across the screen and it's very hard to read. So what we've done is we've transformed it so that we can see it. So you're in the organizational environment, you've got portfolio decisions, you have programs and projects that deliver results. Know why it is not happy. There we go. Operations, the business value is realized there. And then you have these feedback loops. Right? Basically, this is what it says about each one of those areas. So there's text, and you can read this in the slide deck. And these texts is directly out of the practice guide. So what? So what do you do with it now? Okay. Well, here is a very short readiness checklist, change readiness. And you start asking some of these questions. For example, business impact analysis. Managers feel a sense of ownership in the organization's strategy. Now, there's one I took out here. I felt uncomfortable having it there. But one of the questions is management trusted? And if you look at the recent situation with Boeing and their machinists, I think you can make a statement that the machinists didn't trust Boeing management, and probably vice versa. So trust was a very big issue there in getting change. All right? So now, this is our last and final question. And I think this is where the discussion should be, and this is where we have really focused our presentation. I'd like to hear from you about organizational change issues in your organizations, things where you felt it could have been done better or you did it really well, where organization change was a big component.
As a project planner, I do a lot of consulting with organizations, pretty much at a strategic level, where we're looking at introducing PPM in those companies. One of the things that we found is that people don't understand why change is happening. They fundamentally don't, you know, even at the senior level in the organization, kind of looking around saying, well, we know change is happening, we don't really know why it's necessarily happening. So they need to get a handle on that. And one of the things that I've done in the past is I've downloaded the company report, which actually identifies the mission and the vision of the company and all their goals and objectives. And we go in and we actually talk to them about, you know, are you doing the things that actually drive you to these mission and goals that you've got in your company company report? And very often they're not. So what they're actually doing is they've got a lot of projects, but they're not actually driving the business in the right direction. They're not driving them towards the mission and the goals of the organization. So that's the first thing that we kind of sit down and talk about, and that's where we get to the point where we're identifying all of the portfolio criteria that they need to manage their projects against. But the change management is a result of identifying those kind of key areas where the business is, I guess, deficient because they're not delivering on the right things, or if they are delivering, they might be delivering successfully, but they're not delivering the right things. So that's the, and that happens very often. I mean, we had a big postal company, I'll leave them unnamed, but you know, one of the things we said to them from the outset was, what are you in the business of doing? Are you in the business of delivering information, or are you in the business of delivering letters and envelopes? Because if you're in the business of delivering information, that's a very different business strategy and execution model. And they had to go away and think about that. You know, anyway, they decided that they were very much in the business of delivering letters and envelopes, as it happens, and packages. Mm. Because if it was information, they'd have to become an ISP and change their strategy. But that was in the face of competition from things like, you know, email and other information. So we see that a lot, and across the board, you know, in automotive companies, which is traditionally my background, pharmaceutical, manufacturing, high tech, there's a lot of change.
Yeah, the example that I mentioned earlier from 2004 was a trucking company, a nationwide trucking company. They were in the information technology business. Their trucks moved packages, but it was all about the relationship with the customer. It was all about knowing what was where and when and so on. So what was their business, okay? One of the things, does anybody have experience here in very early on addressing change at the start of something to smooth it instead of addressing the change after the fact or as it's being rolled out?
We're really right in the middle of this right now, and we've tried to get ahead of the curve. But, you know, I was with smoothing out the change, having things roll out easily. But the one thing that I've seen that's really at a deficit is the ownership. You know, you have processes in place, and how do you manage to those processes to ensure that everybody across the organization has the ownership? I'm not really seeing that at every level.
Yeah. In teaching in Australia, I just got back from teaching last October in Brisbane and Canberra, and I was teaching their Department of Defense executives and senior military officers. Now, the British and the Australians use a publication called Managing Successful Programs, MSP. And it has a lot of good things in it that we don't have in our PMI documents. It has a senior responsible officer, okay? It looks at benefits realization very, very early on. And I think that if I go back to my own experience when I was inside a company and inside the Apache helicopter, which was a company that was owned by Howard Hughes. That's where it started. People generally don't know that. I recognized change from the minute I took the job, and I treated it, although today we would call it a change manager. PMI does not recognize the role of a change manager, but MSP, the British folks, do. And the Brits say, sometimes the change is so much that you need a program manager and a change manager. You need both types of people. And that change manager person is looking out in the environment. The program manager is getting it done, but the change manager is saying, wait a minute, you know, we need a team over here. We need a change manager in that division to help us carry the message there because they're being passive aggressive. Right? And they're not getting there. But in my particular case, where I had to turn around the company and get our compliance with the tri-service validation, I treated it as a marketing and sales issue. I published beautiful documents and beautiful books, and they were all had a specific color so I could see when the stuff was around. And then I brought in outside consultants throughout the process to test the people, because I had 200 engineers that basically wanted to design. You want me to design, or do you want me to do this planning stuff? Well, your job's to do both, you know? So I think one of the things that we really fail in project management, program management, portfolio management, is we don't get into looking at change and what we really need to do early enough. And then it's too late. So what I want to do is I want to continue this dialogue, but Dries is the managing director of TPG Africa, and he's the technical side of all of this.
Okay. You might ask, you know, Steve is a very strategic guy, he's talking to CEOs and so forth. Now, what is a tool set guy doing in his presentation? And basically, the message I want to convey exactly 2 points. Firstly, traditionally, when somebody like Steve would go into a company and do all of this magic with the CEOs and convince them of, you know, that they need to change and all of that, you know, it resulted in a report, well received. Steve got paid, but it never translated to anything on the ground. Now, one way to see how things are going to, you know, all the way to execution is, you know, is anybody using a tool set to actually implement that? Now, previously, there were valid excuses for not having tools to support the stuff that Steve does. Things like, you know, it used to be the capabilities that are now in Project Server and Office 365 and Project Online used to be very expensive. You would pay $100,000 quite often for a tool. It was very inflexible and so forth. So they were valid excuses. So with everything that Steve showed you today, from the funnel, the instruments that he spoke about, all of these can be easily embedded in a tool like Project Online without any programming and at the cost of, what is it, $33 per user per month? That excuse, the old excuses about why we're not using a tool, you know, there is no excuse anymore, no valid excuse. The second point I want to make is we've done, since 2002, we've lost count at about 200 implementations of Project Server that we've done over the years. And we haven't counted how many project server 2010 and later implementations we've done, but it must be anything between 50 and 100. And as you know, since 2010, the capability has been built into the portfolio management capabilities have been built into the tool. And despite that, only two of our customers, one is actually using the portfolio selection capability, and one is in the process of implementing that, and it's actually a case study that's going to be, it's a presentation tomorrow by from Exaro, a mining company, one of the one of our proud implementations. So why is that? You know, the tool is there. It's essentially, if you've invested in the rest of it, why isn't it being used? And I see that as it's almost like a canary. You know, the way that miners used to use the canary. The fact that nobody's using the tool is that all of this stuff that Steve has spoken about hasn't been done. You know, the change hasn't. The fact that this tool is not being used is that, you know, the environment isn't right to use the tool. So I would argue that if you go back to your organization and they're not using tool sets to do portfolio management and strategic throughput and all of these things that Steve is talking about, there's something fundamentally wrong in terms of that the changes, the organization hasn't changed, and, you know, that the processes in the background haven't been implemented. So I would strongly suggest that you, if that happens, if that is true of your organization, that you actually talk to somebody like Steve about that. So that's about the
tool. Well, let's talk about how you would talk to an executive about what you heard today. Now, how many of you are in PMOs in here? Okay, and those of you who are in PMOs, who do you report to? What level?
Director
of?
Governance.
Okay. IT manager. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
IT
into finance. Others? Say again. Okay. Anyone else? See, I think this is where some great change can occur that can help companies immensely. Typically, you'll see PMOs associated with an IT organization, and they're essential. But, you know, we're beginning to see chief strategy officers in companies. We're beginning to see enterprise-wide portfolio management, not just IT. Okay, and I think that we have an ability to talk beyond the IT director and beyond the CIO to say, look, we have an opportunity to expand our strategic throughput. That means bring more to the bottom line. And here's how we do it. Okay, it's going to require some education. It's going to require organizational change. Okay, and we need to use these tools at a strategic level, and it can be done, and I've seen it done. My own experience: I have worked now with dozens and dozens of large companies, ranging from pharmaceutical to trucking to aerospace to space and missiles and banking and so on. And most of those cases were all at the executive level. I hate to say this for those of you who work in the IT organizations, but I generally stayed away from IT organizations. They were gatekeepers. Okay? I wanted to get the executive level buy-in. Look at what you can do. And that's why I'm back, you know, at a project conference after not being here for more than 10 years. Because now you have the means to do this and do it easily. You don't have to go and say there's a huge investment that's required. You got to install these servers. I remember in year 2000, I installed Project Central. Remember that, Adrian? And as soon as the guy who installed it and knew how to run it left, it was over. And we had to train another guy to do it. And then he left, okay? And you don't have any of that anymore. So I think we're on a brand new wave and a brand new capability where we have the strategic throughput ideas. You can make a real big difference in your company. And we have the easy way to do it with the tool set. So let me just close it out now and ask, I'll stay around if you have any questions. Our contact information is at the end of the slide deck. I'll give you a business card if you're interested in following up. You have the handouts. And let me just close it out with, are there any other questions or comments? I know that's always a tough one before lunch. Just a second, let me hand you my microphone.
You've talked a bit about coming from no tools to cloud-based tools, but what advice would you have from going from an on-premises installed tool set to cloud-based?
Oh, what is the extent of your on-premise implementation?
It's extensive. I think just at the moment we have everything that would be cloud-based, but the question is, should we continue it on-premises? We have SharePoint, Enterprise, SQL.
Adrian, you didn't know, but come on up here. what we want to do is, why don't you come to the microphone and we will have a little dialogue here. Yeah, because we need to ask you some questions.
The answer will be, it depends on a lot of things.
Well, so right, that's why we're going
to
ask you.
I probably don't know the answer to all of those. Okay. I probably don't know the answer to all the questions.
Okay, so we have a lot of customers today who have on-premise environments, and they're looking at 2013, and they're trying to ask the same questions, should I go on into the cloud, or should I stay on-premise? A lot of that really depends on some of the functionality and key things that they want to have. You did see in the demo today where we are expanding a lot of the reporting so you can have the SRS reports and things like that. And that's been one thing that's prevented some people from wanting to go to the cloud. Another thing is that you would have to move all of your data to the cloud. Now, today we don't have a way for you to say, here is my database, please go provision against that, and you're ready to go. But there are tools out there that will take the bulk of your information, move it to the cloud if that's the direction you want to go. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it really depends on, I guess, the control you want to have over it. I work with a number of Department of Defense type contractors and things like that who, because their contractual obligations and so forth and having the need to be audited regularly and so forth, they need to have their data in their data centers. So it really is going to depend on how much control you want to have over your own hardware, or you know, if you want to give it all to Microsoft or to one of our partners who also does the hosting and so forth. Some of our partners will also give you more capabilities to add some of your own customizations. Mm-hmm. So the online solution that we have with Microsoft today, we don't allow you to say, well, I have this other tool that I'd like to shove onto it. We just don't have that capability at this point. We don't allow that kind of customization, but there are plenty of partners who do allow that today. So again, it depends on what you have in your environment today, if you have that customization you need, the types of reporting you need, and so forth.
What about cost? I mean, when you consider the cost of the turnover that you just mentioned and when somebody leaves versus the extra IT people.
Yeah, and keeping everything up to date on your servers.
Have there been studies done on the cost, the long-term cost of on-premises versus cloud?
I'm sure there have been. I don't have them in my head, though.
You know, the one piece of advice I'd have, and maybe Adrian, you would concur with this, and if not, I'm sure you'll tell me, but it's a learning process, and I'm sure that there's something that you could start doing now that would give you the experience that you need to make a full decision to decide how much you were going to keep in-house. What do you think?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. We have the, like even play around with it and sort of get a sense for what it is. And I know that there have been plenty of studies that have been done to show the cost of being online versus hosting it yourself and the cost of, you know, your own data centers, the people to manage that, and all the updates and so forth.
Can I maybe just add something? The scenario that you sketched is you've got a huge on-premise installation, maybe of 2010, and you're considering moving all of that to the cloud, which is great. We believe this is where everybody will end up. But something to think about, if you just want to do the strategic part, you know, you just want to do the latest version of the tool for your executives to do, portfolio management, nothing is stopping you from having a small group just on Office 365. Leave in place. It is a huge undertaking to move, you know, to upgrade to the next version on premise, move it into the cloud. But why wait for that? You can within a few minutes provision a project online area for your executives and start using it. You don't need to wait for that. And this is, we see that a lot. Well, some of our biggest customers are in some, long before they're taking the whole organization, they are actually trying out Office 365 and Project Online.
I'd like to add to that. You can become heroes very simply with your executive team. And I did it way back when. Remember, there was time sharing before the internet. And those of us who are old enough, we remember there were silent 700 terminals and teletypes and all that stuff. Okay. Well, I used time share and put out some reports for my executives. And they thought it was magic. How did you do that? Because all we have is this IBM mainframe down there, you know? So you can go online, create some beautiful stuff quickly that is not tied in deeply, but there's summary data tables there that you made or picked up from someplace, and you can display it for your executives and say, well, look, this is what I can do. Now, if you want it real time, then here's the next step. We need to connect it, right? So you can essentially do a model. And that's a really good way to sell it. Any other questions before we go to lunch? Well, thank you. Thank you very much.